It is 6:32. This is 1320 WILS. Muggy day out there. 86 right now. So it is hot and humid on this Wednesday. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Michael Cohen. My next guest, an author of a book that had a big influence on me in particular, Gary Taubes, a health and science journalist, co-founder of the Nutrition Science Initiative, otherwise known as NUSI, author of two fantastic books, one of them, Good Calories, Bad Calories, and also Why We Get Fat, Good Calories and Bad Calories, also a huge New York Times bestseller. Gary, great having you here.
It's great to be with you. Yeah. Thank you, Michael.
You know, it's funny because you were on our show in February of 2014, and I hadn't really understood a lot of these things, but it was several months after that I got more into it and read your book, Good Calories, Bad Calories, to completely changed how I look at eating and food. For those who are not familiar with the concepts here, what's the basic, message from Good Calories, Bad Calories?
Okay, well, the gist of it is, you know, over the past 40, 50 years, we've come to believe that there are certain kind of inherent dietary evils. So the worst is eating too much, obviously, and not exercising enough. And then second to that is the saturated fat in the diet, and then maybe third to that is the salt that we eat. Mm-hmm. And as a science journalist who specializes in science controversies, I got to spend virtually 10 years of my life completely re-reporting the science of nutrition. Mm-hmm. And what you find out was that the science behind those beliefs were pretty bad to begin with. And I mean, even the idea that you get fat because you eat too much was pretty poorly thought out, and that there was this other stream of nutrition science that completely implicated the refined grains and sugars in our diet.
And that's really the cause. Now, are we now beginning to accept that paradigm shift?
Yeah, I think that's becoming conventional wisdom. It's funny, even the people who still vehemently disagree with me about saturated fat or the cause of obesity will all say, well, of course we shouldn't eat, you know, white bread and sugar. Mm-hmm. And of course sugar is being attacked right and left nowadays, as I think it justifiably should be.
Right, but you know, I hear people say, look, this is the new fad, you know, low carb. How is that not the case?
Well, for starters, low-carb diets were the conventional wisdom from, I don't know, 1825 through the 1960s was that carbohydrates make you fat. You know, bread, pasta, potatoes, rice. I mean, the first massively best-selling diet book, which was in 1865 by a fellow named William Banting, was a low-carb, high-fat diet. It was effectively the same diet as Atkins. And mm-hmm. you know, the great German clinical investigator of the late 19th and early 20th century concluded if you wanted to make an obese person lean, or at least leaner, you got them off carbohydrates and had them eat fat instead. And this just stayed the thinking through the 1960s. And then suddenly we decided that dietary fat was a problem, saturated fat, and that, you know, the major problem with obesity is obese people just can't control their appetites. Right. And everything shifted.
Okay, but
we'll
hear nutrition experts, you know, the mantra seems to me that it's all about moderation. Is that your view on it?
No. I think moderation is what thin people assume they do naturally, and therefore if fat people did it also, they too would be thin. Mm-hmm. It's not about, again, they did. Yeah, it's funny. I'm writing this book on sugar, which happens to be, as of this month, officially 3 years overdue. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I should have realized from my earlier books is this whole idea that obesity is an energy balance disorder. You know, you hear this phrase, it's calories in minus calories out. And that dates to like the 1900s, 1910s, mm-hmm. when the only tools that nutritionists had to study diet and obesity were measuring energy. You know, they had these things called calorimeters where you could measure how much energy someone expended or how much energy was in a food, and they had the laws of thermodynamics, so they came upon this idea that it's all about calories in, calories out.
And that's what we got stuck on. Now, with sugar then, can you consume sugar moderately? Is that possible?
Well, it probably is for some people. The question is it for everyone? You know, one of the arguments that I'm making in this book, so there's a reasonably good chance, put it this way, if you were going to come up with the prime suspect for the cause of obesity and diabetes, type 2 diabetes, of which roughly 30 million Americans now suffer from it, the prime suspect should be sugars.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, sucrose, the white stuff we put in our coffee and on our cereal, and the high fructose corn syrup and the sodas and the juices. And if sugars are the cause of these diseases, they're kind of the cause of all the diseases that associate with it, which happen to include not just heart disease, but cancer and Alzheimer's.
Is that the medical community, does it believe that concept?
No, I wouldn't say so, no. Mm-hmm. I would say that people like me and a few others who are considered zealots are trying to get them to accept it, but they're getting closer and closer. Again, the way we think of sugars traditionally is it's empty calories, which again is this 1900 circa science. And what I and others have been arguing is there's been 100 years of medical science since then,
mm-hmm.
and we know that the sugars are, they're half a carbohydrate called glucose and half fructose. Those two carbohydrates happen to be metabolized in entirely different organs, and the fructose is metabolized in the liver where it seems to do a lot of damage.
In the liver,
and
even the fructose.
Well, it starts in the liver, and then it gets systemic. For instance, there's a disorder now called non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is almost identical to the fatty liver disease that you get from drinking alcohol, but this is in people who have never drank alcohol. And it now estimate is 40 million Americans and 7 million children. And if it progresses, it eventually progresses to a disorder called NASH. And
that's sugar-based, that issue?
The logic is it's sugar-based, and people, hepatologists who study the liver and pediatric endocrinologists who study, you know, have patients, kids with fatty liver disease, they think, well, this is the sugar because we're metabolizing half of the sugar in the liver.
Yeah, I'm talking to Gary Taubes, by the way, author of the two books, A Good Calories, Bad Calories, and Why We Get Fat. Absolutely recommend reading both of them. The one Good Calories, Bad Calories, more extensive text. Now, has this affected your own kind of lifestyle, doing all the research into this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I changed my diet about, a dozen years ago. Regrettably, I trust my research better than that of the research community.
Okay. And so, what does that mean? You don't consume sugar, period?
I eat very little sugar, and then very few starches and grains. It's a lot of green vegetables, and then a lot of, regrettably, animal products, at least for the animals involved. And, breakfast tend to be things like smoked salmon or eggs and bacon.
What do you envision if the medical community, the public, really accepts these ideas? Well, first of all, do you think it'll ever really be accepted popularly?
Well, the goal of the Nutrition Science Initiative, this nonprofit I co-founded, is to fund and facilitate research that will, you know, if we're right, you never know with science, but if we're right, we'll get the research community behind these ideas. We think the scientists, you know, they're scientists. They'll go where the evidence takes them, and if they change their minds, the medical organizations will eventually, probably not as quickly, change theirs.
Okay. But do you think as humans we can ever really accept a life that limits, you know, these starchy carbs and the sugars that people seem to love?
Well, I think if the alternative is obesity and diabetes and the individuals are getting the correct advice from their physicians and their dietitians and their governments so that it's not all this conflicting information, yeah, I think you can. It's not that difficult. It takes a little bit of a month or two to get used to it, and then like anything. I mean, as a journalist, I had the advantage or disadvantage of being a smoker, and there was a period when I couldn't imagine living without cigarettes.
I see, and now it's different. I mean, your book, Good Calories, Bad Calories, outlines so much research that was done on this. Why is all that ignored even today when, you know, there is such an epidemic now?
Well, again, this idea that we just get fat because we eat too much seems so obvious that anything else is taken as quackery, to put simply. And the idea, beginning in the 1920s, when the medical community in the U.S. was as naive as could be about the science of endocrinology, which is the science of hormones and hormonal regulation of growth processes. Mm-hmm. I mean, even back then, they would say, well, saying that obesity is a hormonal disorder is an excuse for the fat person not to, you know, eat in moderation and exercise. Okay, and this has always been the approach. It's just an excuse.
Are there, though, commercial interests and monetary interests that are going to resist a truth like this really coming to light?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the food industry in the United States, I mean, the major food producers, for the most part, sell carbohydrate-rich foods and drinks and alcohols.
Right.
And the message that what you're selling is toxic, for lack of a better word, is not one they want to accept.
Yeah.
So it's very easy for them to say, even a Coca-Cola or PepsiCo, they'll say, look, yeah, we buy, you know, if you drink too much Coke, you'll get fat, but then don't drink so much or balance it out by exercise.
Well, right, and Coke just came out, right, with this initiative or this nonprofit.
Yeah, they were backing this organization called the Global Energy Balance Network, and the idea was they'd get all these academics to say, hey, just we got to be more physically active. We got to exercise more.
When they find they find the academics to back them and support these ideas.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, there's a subset of academics who aren't that hard to find or buy.
Hmm. Hey, tell me, Gary, when is your book coming out? I mean, I'm certainly going to be reading it myself. When is that?
I'm hoping to finish a draft in the next 6 weeks, so maybe this time next year, with luck.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. I just want to lay out the case against sugar, why it is people like me and a minority but growing proportion of nutritionists and researchers think that sugar is the primary problem with all modern diets, and much heavenly as it may be, we'd all be better off restricting
without it. One last thing, sugar, you're talking sugar and also white flour, or are they separate to you?
Well, I think the thesis that I'm pushing in this book, and I think makes a lot of sense, and that I had a New York Times Magazine cover article on this back in 2011. All these diseases, obesity, diabetes, heart disease, even cancer, are diseases of condition called insulin resistance, where your cells are resistant to the actions of the hormone insulin. And it appears that, as I said, sugar, because of this metabolism of fructose in the liver, could be the primary cause of insulin resistance. So it makes you insulin resistant. You secrete too much insulin to the other carbohydrates in the diet, particularly the white flour.
And it all compounds, basically.
Carbs. Uh-huh. Everything becomes bad.
Right. Oof. We're scratching the surface. If you really want to change your own paradigm and really see right through everything to the truth, check the book out, Good Calories, Bad Calories, or if you want to get a quick read, Why We Get Fat, both books by Gary Taubes. Really fantastic reads. Gary, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me, Michael.
Yep.